Now 8:03 a.m. on October 17, 2022, and I called a meeting the order of the complaint screening committee for the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Mr. Wynn?
Present.
We have quorum and may proceed.
The first complaint scheduled for review today is case number 2232 for Alicia Pellegrin. Dr. Meyer, will you provide the committee with a brief overview of the complaint since you're the lead member for this case?
Yes, it's very frustrating. I mean, like I don't...
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. The father, the complainant, and his ex-wife, mother, have one daughter who was born in 2013. They share joint custody of daughter. The father has complained against Dr. Pellegrin based on, excuse me, an issue with... custody and involvement with DCS. However, and so daughter was not allowed to go to mother's and her boyfriend, then husband, so the stepfather. Daughter was not allowed to go to stepfather's house due to DCS involvement and abuse. However, in November 2020, the parents had reached a Rule 69 agreement to focus on reintegration for the daughter to be allowed 50-50 split and start interacting with the stepfather at and mother at their house again. Dr. Pellegrin was contracted to provide an assessment and potentially therapy for reintegration. The daughter was 7 years old at the time she was evaluated by Dr. Pellegrin. In April 2021, Dr. Pellegrin issued a 5-page report regarding her evaluation of reunification with therapy with the stepfather. And referred the family to Beth Winters, a licensed professional counselor, to provide the reunification therapy. On April 11th, 2022, father submitted a claim against Dr. Pellegrin, alleging several issues, to include that she misdiagnosed daughter. Her report was not robust and lacked quality. The psychological testing was conducted incorrectly, and Dr. Pellegrin recommended a reunification therapist, Ms. Winters, who engaged in unsafe techniques, which Dr. Pellegrin approved of. Father also submitted a complaint against Ms. Winters with the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. As this was a forensic-involved case, the claim was previously reviewed independently prior to coming to this board. Subsequent to Dr. Pellegrin's report, the father retained a forensic child psychiatrist, Dr. Sandra Antoniak, to conduct an additional evaluation, which arrived at different diagnoses. Dr. Pellegrin responded to the allegations noting that she's been practicing since 2014, has completed over 900 child custody evaluations and thousands of court-related mental health evaluations. She noted that this case involves a father in a high-conflict custody case who was shopping for a therapist and psychologist or psychiatrist who would tell him what he wants to hear about daughter and assist him in his litigation against mother. Dr. Pellegrin notes that daughter received therapy from other services and were consistent with not providing specific diagnoses. Sorry, I've got something going outside my house. Dr. Pellegrin, in conducting her evaluation and reviewing a variety of sources, concluded that there was no longer a risk of child abuse in stepfather's home, and she determined that the length of time that had passed with no exposure to stepfather, and because father was so fearful of daughter being around stepfather, that daughter had built up in her mind the situation that occurred and is severely overestimating the danger of being put back in the home. Dr. Pellegrin recommended a specific therapy, which then again was referred to Beth Winters for implementing that. And that concludes my summary for the open session. I left out quite a bit about specific diagnoses, and if we need to discuss any specific diagnoses, that would need to occur in an executive session. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. Is the complainant CC present? If so, please unmute yourself and state your initials only for the record, as this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and the committee may have questions for you following your statement. CC?
Absolutely, CC, sorry. Mr. Chairman, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm ready to begin. I apologize. Yeah, sorry. So, yeah, I just heard the summary. My name is here. We're over 6 hours of recordings, forensic interview, a Hope House tape that was created for the child when she had witnessed abuse, and the therapy notes from Dr. Winters, and all the email exchanges and all the documentation from Beth Winters. Basically, I'd like to address Dr. Antoniak's report. since then, I have an update to this case. The child was reevaluated by an LMSW working for ASSIS named Robin Edgar. The child has been diagnosed by the second opinion diagnosis, which was picked by the mother, and she has PTSD accounts of abuse, and that is written in Beth Winter's notes as talking with Dr. Pellegrin. So where this thing got botched up, and again, I'm not a professional. It took a while to make this claim. I was not in any litigation with mom over custody. That wasn't the issue at all. What happened here is that my daughter had witnessed abuse in Mr. Moore's household, which is the husband. He got convicted with a class 6 felony for domestic violence against a minor child. Excuse me. So my daughter's forensic interview and so forth, that was the evidence used to convict Mr. Moore. So she did witness, she did witness abuse in the household. There's a video a month before where the child is explaining the events of abuse. And so that was also submitted to the police in a part of that report. So Dr. Pellegrin saying in her notes and in the notes to Beth Winters, I assume the child didn't witness any abuse, shows that she did not read the documentation handed over to her. I was also told by Dr. Antoniak that, any techniques that are involved restricting a child of food or water are also not you know, part of the standard of care and are strongly advised against on the child psychiatry. Academic psychiatry. I provided that as well in the evidence. Practice parameter, for assessment and treatment of children and adolescents. She had an intense fear, which Dr. Pellegrin had noted in her report. She said the child visually tremored and cried twice. Dr. Antoniak had performed this. And the whole reason we did this, it wasn't me just going. I have the therapy notes to show we had a recommendation from Easter Seals Blake Foundation in Tucson. They believed it was an emergency because of the suicide attempt my daughter made on her last session with Beth Winters. Okay, they forced her in a position. I provided the recordings of that session so you wouldn't have to take my word for it, because you can hear it straight from her mouth. So at that point, you hear how they say, you know, I have to make sure she's ready. Mom advocates that, well, if you tell her to do it, she'll do it. When that happened, the child became emotionally dysregulated, and they went ahead and brought in Mr. Moore at that point. And Mr. Moore, was in there. They were trying to do reunification. Mind you, this, you know, we stipulated to this a year after agreeing to Dr. Pellegrin's report, you know, so we're about a year in. So, you know, we were going on course, and the mom and I had a great relationship up to this point, this day. So what ended up happening is that afterwards there was a contention between mom and Alul at that time. And so she didn't want to live anymore. I had called Dr. Pellegrin, who had talked to Beth Winters, and they went ahead and said, give a 2-day break and try to get her back into the household. So, you know, from there, that's when, you know, we had two responses with crisis team. We had a very uncontrolled behavior. This led to a lot of problems between mother and I, because, you know, personally, and again, I'm not trying to throw it, I'm trying to keep to the talking points here on my daughter, you know, this situation really got out of hand, and I'm reading the practice parameters, and on there, this child was advocated and recommended by Beth Winters and Dr. Antoniak. Dr. Pellegrin, I had brought this to her attention that they had advocated that this child, if she didn't want to go into the household where she saw abuse, she had to stay in a car, outside of the house. So this child was in that car for up to 6 hours with no food or water. It's recorded. It's shown on there. I had told this to Dr. Pellegrin. I provided the email, and her response was a letter saying that this is salacious behavior. We're giving too much power to a child. And I'm being told by other, you know, parents and so forth that, you know, or I'm sorry, professionals that is not the standard of care. This is PT. I have the documentation provided to you guys from Easter Seals saying their recommendation to get a second opinion. Okay. I was following clinical recommendations. So that just, you know, that doesn't fly. And I am actually disturbed by that, because that's just a lack of professionalism, in my opinion, to try to put the blame on there. There's documentation for all of this. And, you know, Ms. Dr. Pellegrin's own words even state she assumed the child never witnessed anything. There's a conviction. My daughter was a witness. He was convicted, you know. So I just don't understand how there was a big missing thing. You know, I almost lost my daughter 22nd, and, you know, it's put a lot of heart on my family, you know, and she's lucky that I couldn't get an attorney, because there's no damages, because nobody should have to go through that. I apologize. It's been a very emotional roller coaster, you know, so sorry bringing this back up. You know, I've had to start therapy myself, because this thing has had such an impact on the family, you know. I mean, it's my daughter. So yeah, I mean, that's the problem here. There was never a problem with my daughter around Mr. Moore. The problem has been the treatment, and it has been advocated by Devereaux, Southern Arizona Advocacy Center the Advocacy Center for Children. I provided these notes there. You can see the recommendations. I didn't go for Dr. Pellegrin. That came from a recommendation from Devereaux. And so this has been a long, litigious battle. And, you know, there's dealing this on the personal side, you know, with her mother and so forth. So anyways, I apologize. I'm not trying to get too off topic, but that's essentially what happened. And forgive me for getting emotional there. You know, it's just been a tough road. Apologies.
Thank you, Cece. Appreciate that. Does the committee have any questions for Cece at this time? Hearing none. Dr. Pellegrin, are you present? If so, please unmute yourself and state your full name for the record. Your attorney may also unmute themselves and state their name for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following your statement.
Hi, this is Ann Fulton Cavett. I represent Dr. Pellegrin. I will take our 5 minutes to address what's been said and what's been written in the investigative report. First and foremost, there is no identification of any violation of any rule or statute present in the investigative report. And as such, the complaint needs to be dismissed based on the statutes applicable to the psychologist board. There is a mention of a concern about another psychologist diagnosing my client's report. Thankfully, that's not the standard by which we evaluate psychologists. Many times, different providers come to different conclusions. However, the second evaluation by the other psychologist was inherently flawed. She was hired by the father. The interview was done at the father's lawyer's office. Only the child and the father were interviewed. The mother and the stepfather were not interviewed. The reunification therapist was not consulted, interviewed, nor were her records reviewed. The bottom line is that there was no, that the child at the time my client evaluated her did not meet the DSM. Child witnessed the abuse. And that is the father. There's a reason why hearsay is not admissible in a court of law, and that is because of its inherent unreliability. The child was seen by the Arizona Children's Association, Devereaux, Easter Seals. She's been all over town to multiple therapists, and at no time prior to the subsequent psychologist's report was there any discussion about this child having any signs and symptoms
to be using any diagnoses in the meeting?
Okay.
Thank you.
The court has not taken the child from the mother. The court had ordered that reunification go forward. I need to address this allegation that the child was kept in a car with my client's consent or approval for up to 6 hours. That's just wholly incorrect and untrue. The reunification therapy was by a different licensed provider, not Dr. Pellegrin. And to say that she was kept in a car is one-tenth of the story. The child was given options about what she could do in the time period between mom picking her up from school and mom taking her to her dance classes. And those, apparently the attempt was to give the child some choices as what she would do, including playing in the front yard, playing on the trampoline, playing with her brothers and sisters outside, coming in the house, doing her homework in the yard, doing her homework in the car. She had a backpack full of snacks. So this, you know, withholding food and water thing is just a red herring. The bottom line is that there's no evidence that my client violated any rule or statute applying to psychologists. She did her evaluation at the time the child was 7 years old. The alleged abuse that occurred was at the time this child was four. There are substantial questions as to whether or not she witnessed the abuse, was even in the home at the time of the abuse. The mother presented evidence to the court that she was not in the home at the time of the abuse.
To take
the side of one parent or information from one parent is below the standard of care for psychologists, for therapists, for physicians. And that's not what my client did. My client interviewed everyone involved and her report was thorough and extensive. Again, because there's no evidence that she fell below the standard of care or violated the statute or any regulations for psychologists, the complaint needs to be dismissed. Thank you.
And Ms. Fulton Cabot, can you clarify for the record if Dr. Pellegrin is present today? I don't see her on the screen unless she called in.
She was going to call in, and I see some phone numbers are listed without names of identifiers. Yeah. So I'm not sure if she's on the call, but she certainly was trying to call in.
Dr. Pellegrin, are you one of those numbers? 254-985.
Oh, I just, excuse me, I just got a text saying she's unable to get her microphone unmuted.
Hello? I think I did it. Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, I am here. I've been on the call the entire time. I was having trouble getting the video.
Okay, do you have anything to add, Dr. Pellegrin?
Just that this was a forensic evaluation. It was court ordered. Forensic standards, according to the APA forensic guidelines, are different from clinical standards. Requires that one think about alternative hypotheses. And the only way to do that is to interview everyone involved, which I did, which is definitely the standard of care for forensic work. I still maintain that the diagnosis is not there at the time of the spanking. She was in dance class, and there were other people. The stepfather said she wasn't there. So criterion A, traumatic or life-threatening. In
Dr.
my opinion, Pellegrin, she did not meet criterion A. Yes.
Perhaps you didn't hear before, the use of diagnoses would be inappropriate in this meeting.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Since that is one of the complaints against me, I feel like it's important. So I assure you, you said that I've been practicing since 2014. That's only in Arizona. I've been practicing since the mid-90s, mostly forensic work. So I respectfully disagree with Mr. Care that I'm used to providing. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to just remind everybody, please use initials for patients, children, and the complainant for the future. Does the committee have Does the committee have any questions for Dr. Pellegrino or Ann Fulton Cabot? Dr. Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Pellegrin, thank you for being here. Could you explain a little bit what the specific type of evaluation was that you were supposed to do? What was the reason for the assessment, and how did you go about doing that?
Yeah, so the court wanted terrible feedback. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I think we can hear you now. Somebody went off mute. Go ahead.
The court wanted reunification therapy. I spent time with the attorneys involved, spoke to both of them, and said that, you know, I only had some basic information about the fact pattern, but said that I was not comfortable doing, recommending reunification until I thought that was appropriate in this case. And so the order was modified for me to do an evaluation to determine if reunification therapy was appropriate. And I spoke to the stepfather, I spoke to the mother, the father, I spoke to the child, I reviewed the records that I had, and based on what my impressions were, that reunification after, I think it was close to 5 years since she had been in her mother's home, maybe four at that time, and the stepfather had gone through all the hoops from DCS, had his kids replaced back with him, the mother and the father married in the interim, that I felt like in order for this child to have some sense of normal relationship with her mother, that a very graduated reunification plan was in order. And I made a suggestion to the therapist who I referred to do the reunification therapy that it would start out very gradually. She would first see pictures of the stepfather, then there might be a Zoom meeting, and it was all going to be based on how she did along the way. And that is essentially how I approached the case.
And so your outcome was to say reunification should occur, and the referral was to another provider to do that.
Correct. And I laid out a protocol, a suggested protocol, for a very graduated plan that would take months and months and months before she would even be going back to the mother's home where the stepfather was.
And after you completed your assessment and made the referral to Ms. Winters, what was your involvement moving forward?
Well, at that point, really, my charge was finished. And Mr. Cavalcades and Ms. Winters did reach out to me and say that things were not going well. And I simply responded with, based on what I heard, what she told me, was happening, that it was imperative that the parents work together in order to reassure this child, because she told me that that was not happening. And I just wrote that very benign letter to her, saying that I thought parental co-involvement, co-parenting was important moving forward. And that was it. I didn't get involved in the car incident. My charge was finished. The only thing I did was make a referral to Ms. Winters. And then when she reached out to me, and we had releases, by the way, I simply reinforced the need for the parents to work together.
Okay, thank you. Those were my questions.
Any other questions? Joseph Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate you being here in attendance, Dr. Pellegrin, and also the attorney, Ms. Cavett. What do we have a copy of the court's order for this evaluation? Is that in our packet, Dr. Meyer?
Yes, it is.
Minute entry, I believe, on page
34.
33. Okay.
The start of it.
And so might I assume that the court order, the judge's signature on the order, does indeed reflect what Dr. Pellegrin has mentioned already?
Well, it says that they were making a referral the party shall meet with Dr. Pellegrin to determine whether or not she can provide the therapy to the minor child or recommend someone or an agency that can provide the reintroduction therapy. The parties shall follow the recommendations as to therapy and appropriate agency or person. I didn't see anywhere about the extra, a separate discussion to do a more formal evaluation.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Cavett, do you have any additional information to that extent about the order for the court?
There was an order for the court from the court to do the evaluation and then recommend that either that she do the therapy or she refer to somebody to do the therapy. I'm trying to put my hands on it, but I believe that we did send that as part of our response to the complaint. There was an original minute entry requesting my client to give an opinion on reunification. She clarified with the attorneys that there needed to be an evaluation before she could give an opinion, and the court ordered that evaluation. There's no question that the court ordered that evaluation.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Pellegrin, so as your forensic duty, then you undertook the evaluation and opted to make the referral to another provider to provide reunification treatment. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is correct. My schedule was such that I could not take the case on myself. I have worked with Ms. Winter since I've been in Tucson regarding difficult cases like this and made the referral to her. She accepted it, and the protocol started from there.
And is it your understanding that the, and I'm confused because your attorney referred to the second evaluation as being done by a psychologist. The father indicated that it was done by a pediatric psychiatrist. So I'm confused as to the credentials of that second evaluator. Do you know if that was a child psychiatrist that did the evaluation?
Yes, yes, it was a child psychiatrist, not okay. A psychologist.
Okay, thank you. And that psychiatrist did not contact the mother, or that psychiatrist did not contact you, Ms. Fulton-Cavett, is that correct?
That is correct.
Those are all my questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the committee for Dr. Pellegrin or her attorney? Hearing none, the committee will now begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing their licensees. Dr. Meyer, will you please begin the deliberation since you're lead for the case?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I see here is that Dr. Pellegrin determined that reunification should go forward, had a plan, and referred to a therapist to do that, which is in line with what she was requested to do. I had some concerns about the therapy that was done and how it was done, but that doesn't relate to Dr. Pellegrin. She's not responsible for what another licensed provider does. I'm always very nervous when I refer somebody to someone else and I don't know the quality of their work. Dr. Pellegrin said she's worked with Ms. Winters before. Regardless, Dr. Pellegrin's not responsible for that work. It clouds the issue a little bit when there was that ongoing communication between Ms. Winters and Dr. Pellegrin and the follow-up letter with what looked to me as like some recommendations for treatment. I think that clouds the issue. But it's hard to have reliable diagnoses anyway. I don't see an issue with what Dr. Pellegrin did there. I do think there's a bit of concern in what was the statement in the follow-up letter, Dr. Pellegrin's statement that the acceptable time for any possible trauma or fear regarding her stepfather has long since passed. I think that would suggest a lack of understanding of how trauma works. That you, especially when there's ongoing involvement, you cannot make a determination of, oh, you've surpassed the time limit of when this could be impacting you. So there's some blurring of boundaries here with the ongoing involvement, and I think some concerns about understanding of the effects of trauma. But that's the extent of what I see.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly agree with Dr. Meyer. This is some of this case has been blurred. The boundaries have been blurred a little bit. Dr. Pellegrin apparently has the judge's order to conduct the assessment and to make recommendations. She followed a pretty good forensic protocol of talking to all the parties involved, including the two attorneys. And I certainly applaud her for that. Ethically, she did well in terms of referring the actual treatment work out to another provider. That was well done. And I think Dr. Meyer is correct that it blurs the boundaries when Ms. Winters contacted Dr. Pellegrin and Dr. Pellegrin responded with suggestions. But still, that has to be the therapist's responsibility and not that of the evaluator. So I think I'm having trouble, other than blurring issues, of identifying anything that is remiss or anything that would be unprofessional in Dr. Pellegrin's work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I meant to also say that in regards to the complainant, I think you were right in line with expressing concerns about what was going on for your child and seeking a second opinion. I also had some concerns about that, how the therapy was being done and how much the child was being pushed to quickly be exposed. But I'm also not so sure about that second evaluation, as was pointed out. It was more of a one-sided approach. And I don't know that I'd necessarily rely too much on that second assessment, but I would definitely be looking for another opinion and another approach to the reunification approach. And as Dr. Stewart said, I don't see any violations here. I already said I had some concerns about a couple of things, but I don't think they rise to the level of a violation.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. Any further discussion? Hearing none, is there a motion on this case?
I would make a motion that we dismiss the case.
Second.
Okay. Yes, we have to do a roll call, even though there's only one more here.
You can have a roll call. Okay.
All right. So what do I do? No further discussion. I'll call for a vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. The motion passes.
So the case is dismissed and both parties will be notified in writing of the committee's decision today. So we can move on to the next case, Mr. Chairman.
All right. The next complaint scheduled for review today is case number 2233 for Jamie Kenny. Dr. Meyer, would you please provide the committee with a brief overview of the complaint? Sincerely, the lead for this case as well.
Yes, one second while I shift. All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. excuse me. Jamie Kenny is the psychologist for this. The complainant is another psychologist, GK. Dr. Kenny is employed by WellPath and has been a regional director of mental health since 2017, where she is responsible for the clinical oversight of numerous correctional institutions across multiple states, which includes the Reeves County Detention Center in Pecos, Texas, which is where GK was temporarily employed. This is a private prison owned and operated by the GEO Corp. And Dr. Kinney's agency has a medical services agreement to provide health services at prisons and jails, including this one. The complainant, GK, worked for the agency in a contracted position as a mental health provider at the detention center. She was obtained through a staffing agency. She worked from September 2020 to February 2021. In addition, there was a third psychologist involved, Dr. Weiss, who was the lead psychologist at the detention center at which GK worked. In February 2021, GK's contract was not renewed, and they moved in another direction. In May 2022, GK filed a complaint against Dr. Kenny, alleging that she violated multiple sections of the ethics code, including that she allowed Dr. Weiss to provide substandard mental health treatment to patients or inmates at the detention center, which negatively impacted the mental health of inmates, particularly those confined in the restricted housing unit. She overlooked Dr. Weiss's significant shortcomings. She alleged that Dr. Kenny was aware that Dr. Weiss failed to conduct the required mental status checks for inmates held in isolation, and when they were done, his interactions were very brief. GK alleged that a specific inmate was kept in isolation with no mental status checks. She alleged that they failed to respond to an email regarding a behavior management plan for another inmate, and alleged that Dr. Kenny directed Dr. Weiss not to provide a professional reference for GK. GK has also filed a complaint with Dr. Weiss with the Texas Board. And she provided, GK provided substantial documentation to document these ethical violations. Dr. Kenny provided a response noting that she fulfilled her ethical obligations, interactions with GK, as well as in her role with Dr. Weiss, as well as the inmates. Noted that that none of these ethics complaints were alleged during the time of employment, that all of this occurred afterwards. Dr. Kenny noted that she's responsible for overseeing the quality of care for numerous facilities, including peer reviews, and for managing the mental health team leaders' meetings. She's not responsible for overseeing the daily responsibilities of clinicians or managing patient care at those facilities, as each facility is expected to run independently. She noted that in response to GK's request for a recommendation, that due to GK being contracted through a staffing agency, the agency's policy was that that any recommendations or feedback would come from the HR department, and she merely informed Dr. Weiss to follow those procedures as opposed to denying a reference. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you very much, Dr. Meyer. Is the complainant GK present? If so, please unmute yourself. State your initials only for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and the committee may have questions for you following your statement. Yeah, you're on mute.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you for your time. We're here today because of Dr. Kenny's unhealthy power and control dynamics. I ask that the board consider the potential impact on those who are less empowered and find themselves under Dr. Kenny's care and or management. Injustice and unethical behavior toward a colleague bodes poorly for those with far less relative power, to include less seasoned clinicians. Leaders who are confident, competent, and who embrace integrity and ethical behavior do not treat a colleague as I was treated. I will begin with an update about where I am professionally. I remain unemployed now for 20 months without an appropriate reference from my WellPath locum tenens physician. My last doctoral level reference, with whom I work daily, is now over 3 years old. And actually, I began on the payroll with WellPath the beginning of July. So I was with them, but I was under contract with Consilium Staffing. I plan to continue working well into my 70s. Instead, I've begun to collect Social Security out of necessity, 23 months before full retirement age, at a loss of at least $4,000 to $5,000 per year, closer to $10,000 per year if I had waited until age 70. This situation is a direct result of Dr. Kenny's unethical behavior towards me that has cost me my career, certainly regarding the DOD. I've never had a problem obtaining employment, yet I don't seem to get beyond the application stage at this point. Failure to have a reference for a one-year period under which time I was contracted is a major red flag. Reviewing my options, I've decided to take a different path. Last week, I applied for a position for which a psychology license is not required, but rather draws on my law enforcement background. I'm unsure if I'm going to renew my license when it's due. Perhaps I can provide a better service from outside of the profession by shining a light on some of my experiences and advocating for those who've been gaslighted and worse by mental health professionals who behave unethically. I plan to speak publicly about my experiences to encourage others to have a voice. I've amassed debt of about $5,000 per month over that period on charge cards. I've lost confidence as well as struggled with depression and anxiety. The stressors in our culture are the worst they've been in my lifetime, and they're made worse by not having work to provide a sense of purpose. From early on in my interactions with Dr. Kenny, I had the sense that she was threatened on some level and needed to make sure that I understood that she was in control. But that need became more obvious over time and appeared to far surpass her concerns with patient care. Further, she demonstrated patently differential treatment of subordinates and was interpersonally manipulative and malicious. Her directive to Dr. Weiss that he was not to provide me with a reference was patently unethical. Professional references are not only customary but requisite for continued federal employment. And that would certainly be an ordinary expected duty in Dr. Weiss's stated role as an administrator. I believe that his cognitive limitations made it easy to cause him to behave in a manner that was contrary to his stated position with respect to my work performance. But as a result, I had to withdraw my application to re-enter the Department of Defense in August of 2021 after receiving a 5 thumbs up from the command staff on my oral board and where I was already vested for pension purposes. Yet another consilium locum tenens provider, Dr. Ben Aguilar, was not replaced by a master's level provider, even as the sister facility was passing their audits. Further, he was apparently able to secure a smooth transition to a position with the DOD at the same base I was to have begun employment the month after his work at Pecos ended. If the delivery of appropriate, timely, and effective mental health services to a particularly disempowered population were important, why remove an effective bilingual psychologist well-versed in Latino culture and who has extensive experience with criminal populations in custodial settings and replace her with an individual who's relatively new to the field yet unlicensed as a clinician who doesn't speak Spanish and for whom English is a second language? In the end, Dr. Kenny chose to proffer a reference for me, unacceptable to future employers given the distance involved and her extremely limited interaction with me, made more so by the odd imposition of the chain of command that further limited our interactions. Her characterization of me on the reference that she tendered is both professionally and personally defamatory. A reference must be true, accurate, and fair. She significantly represented my work performance and did so with malice. With regard to human resources, I emailed human resources. They never got back to me.
Okay. Thank you, GK. Is there any questions from the committee for GK? Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. GK, thank you for being here. I'm struggling to see where the ethical violations are. I've never seen anywhere that someone has to be forced to provide a recommendation or reference letter. How is that tied to professional behavior?
Well, without a reference letter from 1 year's worth of employment, that's a red flag. But the ethical issue is raised where Dr. Weiss told me, you have a heart of gold, you're a workaholic, you did an excellent job, but I can't write you the reference.
But what How does can that have to a do provider
tell another provider who was the team lead that Dr. Kenny was his supervisor and told him, you can't write her reference, which didn't make sense. And that's the unethical piece. In other words, why even get involved if Dr. Weiss wants to write a reference and say I did a great job?
Okay.
But over the time that I was there, I made numerous attempts to reach out to Dr. Kenny and email, phone calls, and it always had to go through Dr. Weiss. So if it needs to go through Dr. Weiss, why would she have then tendered a reference with minimal one-on-one interaction with me and told him he can't write a reference?
Okay. Shifting gears a little bit, what is your understanding of Dr. Kinney's clinical responsibility for inmates under your care? You said there was also ethics violations in regard to patient care. How did the clinical responsibility work in this chain of command, I guess?
Well, when we had what I deemed to be a critical clinical event in October and let her know about it, because that was their company policy, I was dismissed. A couple months later, I guess, because this patient was continuing to be an issue at the facility, all of a sudden, Dr. Kenny was, I need this right now. And at the time, Dr. Weiss was in his room with paper covering the window. He was not seeing inmates. Very, very rarely did he see an inmate. And so he came to me, he said, we now need to work on this. I said, I have all these busloads of inmates coming in. I said, I raised this issue with her 2 months ago, that this was, according to my onboarding training, an issue of a potential critical clinical event. And now all of a sudden, when we have busloads of inmates coming in, now it's important for her that we respond to this. She was not helpful at all with respect to assisting me in the delivery of care. When we had the Zoom call, she was overly solicitous, I guess trying to smooth things over. I'll be in contact to make sure. I wasn't aware the situation had gotten as bad as it has. And then I never heard from her. And having me author then there was the issue about the forensic evaluation that the HSA said, he put it in writing, we don't do forensics. Dr. Weiss authored a forensic evaluation that was just two checks in the boxes, absolutely substandard. I did my pre-doc internship in a forensic training program.
Can I stop you for a second, please? Excuse me, GK? You're bouncing back and forth between Dr. Kinney and Dr. Weiss, and I'd like you to focus just on Dr. Kinney. We don't have any oversight over Dr. Weiss or administrative practices. Okay. So if you could just focus on the clinical, ethical aspects of Dr. Kinney's work, that's what's at issue here.
All right. I need to say that now it's coming up that my network bandwidth is low.
Perhaps if you turned off your video and just did audio.
Yeah, it seems your video is choppy, but your audio is fine.
Mr. Chairman, I turned off her video so she can proceed and see how that works.
Perfect. Thank you, Ms. Michelson.
Okay. So for her to have exhibited any kind of duress towards Dr. Weiss to tell him not to write a reference, when he and I collaborated, I was there from the middle of August actually working with Dr. Weiss until the very end of February.
Okay, BK, you've addressed the reference. My question was,
okay.
In what ways was...
All right, I'm sorry.
That's okay. In what ways was Dr. Kinney's professional actions unethical in regard to inmates at your agency or at your location?
Well, it's hard not to mention Dr. Weiss. I mean, he was putting together paperwork that was flat out fraudulent. I mean, I watched him. He would put, so she knew about this. That's why they were failing the mental health audits.
Okay, so thank you. That was
the issue is, why would Dr. Kinney, let's go back to Dr. Kinney, why would Dr. Kinney even put a reference together for me? She had minimal interaction with me, proffering a reference saying that the only thing that surpassed average, and I was excellent with regard to my use of English language. Most of my interactions were conducted in Spanish. And then to say that I'm not collegial, I lacked good professional judgment when I was trying. Go ahead.
GK, thank you. I'm clear on the reference aspect. And what it sounded like to me was that the primary concern for unethical clinical behavior was in her oversight or lack thereof with Dr. Weiss. Is that...
No, that's just a part of it. It was also her interaction with me as I would try to convey issues at the facility. It was, I was dismissed. So the point is that I have 1 year that of clinical conduct contacts that I cannot even use. And she proffered a reference when she had this very hands-off distancing of me throughout my tenure there.
Okay, thank you. Those are all of my questions.
Is there any other questions to the committee of GK? Hearing none. Dr. Kenny, I see
that... Can I ask something then?
No, not at this time. I think we've covered the question at this point. Dr. Kenny, I see that you're present. Please unmute yourself, state your full name for the record. Your attorney may also unmute themselves and state their name for the record. And this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you after that.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Jamie Kenny, psychologist.
My name is Christina Rood. I am representing Dr. Kenny today. I will be making just a brief statement on Dr. Kenny's behalf. I wanted to start initially by addressing the comments that GK made in her opening brief. GK did not address or describe any unethical conduct by Dr. Kenny in her opening statement. She states only issues with Dr. Kenny's employment reference. Following her engagement with WellPath, and summarily states only that her conduct was unethical and does not delineate any actual issues with Dr. Kenny. This shows that the instant complaint was filed against Dr. Kenny only in response to a less than favorable but honest and accurate employment reference that Dr. Kenny submitted concerning GK. GK, who is a self-proclaimed federal whistleblower and spends her free time posting disparaging and inflammatory remarks about WellPath on her social media accounts, claims that Dr. Kenny violated numerous American Psychologist Association ethical principles and standards. That is not the case, and the overwhelming evidence is to the contrary. Dr. Kenny began her employment with WellPath in 2013 as a psychologist and was quickly promoted. She is currently the Regional Director of Mental Health for the federal and state prisons subdivisions, where she oversees the quality of clinical care provided at each facility, including the Reeves County Detention Center, where GK was engaged during the time at issue. During that time, WellPath provided medical care to inmates at Reeves pursuant to a medical services contract with the BOP and the GEO Group, which allowed for one psychologist, one psychiatrist, and one master's level mental health provider. In early 2020, Dr. Weiss was the facility psychologist and reported directly to Dr. Kenny. The MHP position was vacant at that time, and due to problems filling that position, WellPath contacted a staffing agency to help fill the position. GK was referred for the position and was engaged on or about March 5th of 2020. She was engaged as a master's level MHP, not a psychologist. Dr. Kenny was not involved in the decision to engage GK, nor did she have the authority to do so. Now, the board highlights four specific issues in GK's complaint that arose during her engagement at the Reeves County Detention Center. She first takes issue with Dr. Weiss's provision of mental health care to inmates. She claims that he provided substandard mental health care, and Dr. Kenny allowed him to do so. That is not the case, and the response addresses those allegations in depth. However, due to the confidential nature of any actions taken concerning Dr. Weiss, we will not address those in depth today. She also takes issue with the provision of mental health treatment to inmate TB. In October of 2020, GK notified Dr. Kenny that inmate TB was experiencing acute, non-life-threatening symptoms and living in squalor. Although GK believed this inmate was living in squalor, all objective evidence, including TB's medical record, indicate otherwise. Despite this, Dr. Kenny offered guidance to GK and suggested courses of action, including placing him on suicide watch. Dr. Kenny provided this guidance for months including in December 2020, when she delineated approximately 12 corrective actions that needed to be implemented when she was notified that TB was a possible Prison Rape Elimination Act victim, and GK had not taken any steps to treat TB since October 2020, aside from placing him on suicide watch. She also takes issue with Dr. Kenny's alleged failure to respond to an email concerning a behavior management plan for inmate JC. The evidence shows that GK and Dr. Weiss were unable to come to an agreement about the behavior management plan for that inmate who had been in and out of suicide watch. Dr. Kenny held a team meeting to mediate a professional disagreement between GK and Dr. Weiss and offer guidance as to JC's mental health treatment to ensure that he was, in fact, provided competent and adequate mental health care. She finally takes issue with Dr. Kenny's direction to Dr. Weiss not to provide her an employment reference following her engagement at Reeves and Dr. Kenny's post-engagement employment reference. Following her engagement with WellPath, GK asked Dr. Weiss to complete an employment reference. However, Dr. Kenny instructed Dr. Weiss not to provide a reference, as all references were to be provided through WellPath's Human Resources Department. However, Dr. Kenny was later instructed to provide a reference for GK, and she noted in reference that GK provided poor clinical judgment during her time at Reeves on numerous occasions and had difficulty working with others. This was an accurate and honest assessment of GK's engagement during her time with WellPath. Following that reference, GK contacted WellPath's CEO, notifying him that the employment reference was not acceptable. She also texted Dr. Weiss and threatened him to either correct the reference or she would file a board action against him or a lawsuit. She thereafter filed the instant complaint against Dr. Kenny. In sum, Dr. Kenny fulfilled and exceeded her ethical obligations in her interactions with GK, as she provided continuous support and insight to GK to ensure the competent and adequate mental health care to inmates at Reeves. The instant complaint has absolutely no merit and was filed against Dr. Kenny in retaliation for the less than favorable but honest employment reference that she provided. Accordingly, we respectfully request that the board dismiss the complaint in its entirety against Dr. Kenny. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rude. Is there any questions from the committee for Dr. Kenny or her attorney? Mr. Stewart.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Kenny, regarding what your attorney just indicated, an identification of a PREA victim there in the prison, the Prison Rape Elimination Act, those investigations I don't know about in Texas where this prison is, but in other prisons across the United States, those are conducted by security staff, are they not? They're not conducted by mental health staff.
Correct. In that we have an obligation the minute we know of a Prison Rape Elimination Act violation that a patient needs to undergo a number of steps. The first is to immediately contact the PREA investigator. The second is to obtain a medical and a mental health evaluation on the patient. And those are to occur immediately. We do not wait until we determine if there's veracity to the claim. And in this case, the allegations that had been made were made in emails and not in a formal manner, and the patient was never assessed. So there was a clinician who had been fully trained to know that the first thing you do is you notify investigations and you medically and mentally clear that patient immediately, no matter when it happened and no matter how likely it did happen, and make sure they're okay and offer a sane evaluation to make sure that they're medically well. And that did not happen until I provided a directive.
Thank you. Additionally,
that is absolutely a lie.
GK.
That is a lie.
GK, thank you.
Additionally, Dr. Kenny, the identification of an inmate TB, I heard that it was a non-life-threatening living in their cells. As I'm recalling, we don't have that type of control unless it's a health problem. Security staff would not even make them take showers unless it rises to a degree of personal or safety issue to the jail. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we also have to walk the fine line of making sure it's not to an acute psychological distress that could be causing them not to be able to make decisions for themselves, and recognizing their civil right to be able to refuse treatment and to be able to choose to live in squalor like many people in the United States do, even not in a correctional setting.
Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Meyer.
Chair. Thank you, Dr. Kinney, for being here. Could you explain how your agency works as far as clinical responsibility for inmates? Where do you fall in regards to whose patients inmates are and who's clinically responsible?
So where if I hear you correctly, where do I fall in the continuum of clinical oversight?
Correct.
Okay. So as a regional director, I'm responsible to educate, peer reviews, provide support to the local teams. The local teams are operated under our operations department, and they answer to the health services administrator, which could be described similarly to a hospital administrator. So they answer directly administratively and are hired directly through the operations teams. I work on quality of care, and if there are issues, I work with the HSA and the regional director of operations to make changes. I do not have any authority to come into a facility and provide direct discipline. Now, I can provide a directive like I did in a few of my emails where I put out bullet points and tried to set an expectation of the standard of care. But if they did not provide that standard of care, I would have to include operations in order for that to be enforced.
And so for clinical decision making, do you, if an agency's not in agreement over clinical care, do you have oversight over that?
If the local psychologist at the site?
Correct.
Okay. They are licensed to practice independently. I cannot tell them what they can and can't do. And I think my emails reflected that as well. So if someone wants to put someone on a suicide watch, as an example, or take them off of watch, I don't tell them they have to do this or that. They are there. They're seeing the patient there. They've got the license to practice independently, and they get to make that decision. I come in when there's issues where it appears standard of care hasn't been met, or if they want a curbside consult, and that's the point where I can get involved.
Okay. Thank you. Those were all my questions.
Any other questions for Dr. Kinney or her counsel? Hearing none, the committee will now begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing the licensees. Dr. Meyer, would you please begin the deliberation since you are the lead for the case?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I don't see any violations here. All of the material that we received, with Dr. Kinney's explanation of her role, she was not directly involved in clinical care. When there were operational issues, when there were staffing issues, I thought her email responses were appropriate and professional. And in regards to a reference letter, I've never seen where somebody is required to provide a reference or recommendation letter. And if an agency or a supervisor declines to provide one, trying to force them to provide one is usually going to result in a bad recommendation. But regardless, I've worked in a number of agencies that have moved to HR being responsible for this, right? And employees aren't allowed to provide these recommendation letters, thanks to the attorneys and legal system. No offense, you two that are here. So I just don't see a professional issue there either. So I would make a motion to dismiss the case.
I second that motion.
All right. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. The motion passes.
The case is dismissed and all parties will be notified in writing. So we can go ahead and move on to the next case, Mr. Chairman, for Dr. Susan LaChica. And I actually have an update for this case. I do want to let the committee know that I received an email from her attorney last night at approximately 11 p.m. He did request a continuance today as his flight was delayed, so he will not be able to attend the meeting. So the committee can determine if the continuance request is approved, and if so, then this complaint would be placed on the next meeting agenda in November.
I'd make a motion to continue to the November meeting.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes. Continue to November. All right. I think we're on to the next one, right? The next complaint scheduled for review today is case number 2237 from Michael Borders. As a reminder, any questions regarding confidential health information shall be discussed in executive session with Dr. Borders, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Stewart, would you provide the committee with a brief overview of the complaint since you're the lead member for this case?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Borders was employed as a private healthcare contractor with a company, a major healthcare, a major employment company, used to be called Brown and Root, but now it's KBR, I guess, and they provide staffing for military bases. Specifically, Dr. Borders was assigned to the Cannon Air Force Base in New Mexico. Dr. Borders, the complaint is that he failed to provide adequate clinical services, and that he fell below a particular threshold of cases per week. Dr. Borders relates in his response to those complaints that he's had, I think, two or three major surgeries and has had to contend with that. It is noted that the KBR indicates that impairment can be physical or mental. The suggestion that Dr. Borders was impaired apparently is that his medical conditions, including some specific issues, interfered with his ability to function adequately as a psychologist, a clinical psychologist. And there's, in response to the Defense Health Agency, if a matter goes beyond 30 days without a successful resolution, then it is automatically referred to the National Practitioner Database of complaints. And apparently that is what happened in this case. And so at that point in time, the National Database, Practitioner Database, will contact the Board of Examiners in each state where that particular person has a license, holds a license. And that's what happened here. And so the case is not from a patient. It's not even from the Department of Health Administration or from KBA, but simply because it went unresolved for more than a certain number of days, that it was automatically referred to the Board of Examiners. Attempts by our Board of Psychologist Examiners to gain updates has not been terribly successful due to the cumbersome nature of the Department of Health Administration, Defense Health Agency, I'm sorry. And so I'm left with trying to understand these specific complaints. And it seems to be one that Dr. Borders was not able to provide the clinical hours necessary to fulfill his contract. At that point in time, the agency stripped Dr. Borders of his clinical privileges. Without clinical privileges, you're not permitted to see patients. And that's where it rests right now, as I understand it. So there's not a patient complaint about this. And that's a thumbnail sketch.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Dr. Borders, I see that you're present. Please unmute yourself, state your full name for the record. Your attorney may also unmute themselves and state their name for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and the committee may have questions following your statement.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jean Galvin. Just a reminder that if the respondent or the board members have any questions about specific health information, that we are able to go into executive session. So I don't want the respondent to feel compelled to disclose health concerns on the record.
Hello, this is Bretton Barber. This is Bretton Barber on behalf of Dr. Borders, attorney at law.
And this is Michael.
Welcome. Okay. Dr. Borders, and, are you going to make a brief statement or the attorney?
I'll make a brief statement if I may. My client is here. He's present to answer any questions you might have. You know, quite frankly, I just don't. Well, I'll get to the heart of the matter. I think when you look at the complexities and nuances of this case, this boils down to two sort of things. We have sort of an HR matter, and Dr. Borders resigned from the position, and his resignation letter is in the materials some time ago. And that resignation was accepted, and that's also in the materials. And then it seems like, quite frankly, there's this gap of information. I mean, there's this, I guess, this allegation of not meeting clinical hours or and there's impairment, there's all kinds of things, but which Dr. Borders has responded to. The automatic, whoever automatically generated this complaint, for whatever reason, doesn't want to seem to provide any information other than just the basic allegations. And quite frankly, the issue with clinical hours is evidence that we brought forth from our records, as I recall. I'm not clear, quite frankly, other than it automatically being generated, what the complaint is, what statute's being violated or ethics code is being violated. I think it's an HR matter, and certainly if more information were to become available, I don't know, I'm just like hypothetically regarding drug use or something at work, like impairment in that sense. That's kind of what I think, and having done this for 10 years, when I hear an allegation of impairment, but I don't see that. And so I would just humbly ask that you can certainly ask my client any questions you may have of him, but I would humbly ask this be dismissed. And certainly if any additional information becomes available, if the complainant decides to be responsive to the subpoena that was issued, the board could open a new complaint. But at this point, it just seems like we're kind of left wondering. Thank you.
Okay, is there any questions for the committee for Dr. Borders or his counsel? Mr. Stewart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Borders, thanks for being with us this morning. Now, you're back in Cochise County, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Do you plan, I noticed in some of your materials, you had not seen private patients since before you went to work at Cannon Air Force Base. Are you planning to see patients in the future? Are you planning on contract work or any idea?
I would like to see patients in the future, and if contract work becomes available, I'd like to be able to do that on a more limited basis. Yeah, that's the future.
Okay.
I want this to be resolved first to see where I stand.
Sure, and I certainly appreciate that. What, generally speaking, and again, not going into any specific diagnostic impressions, unless you have, if you want to explain something specifically further, as our board attorney has indicated, we can go into executive session. But generally speaking, is your health at this point in time sufficient to undertake a limited private practice, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's my impression. I don't think that was ever a question. The assumption here by DHA was that I was contracted to be a hospital clinician, that was my role as a psychologist. I was required to have a license to be able to provide clinical services as a part of the contract, but I was contracted to another major command to provide services directly to the operational commander.
Dr. Borders, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I would just remind you to focus on the question that you were asked.
Okay, thank you. So, that's, yes. I feel like I can still practice as a psychologist.
Good. Thank you, Dr. Borders. And I did forget to place that in my narrative at the beginning, that you were not contracted to be the hospital-based mental health psychologist, but was contracted with a special operations group to provide other services. So I apologize for not including that. Those are all of my questions, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions, Dr. Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Borders, for being here. When did you learn of this report to the National Data Bank?
I think it was somewhere in July.
Okay. And are you aware of, from your perspective, did you practice unprofessionally, provide any unprofessional services while in the service of DHA?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Dr. Borders? Hearing none, the committee will now begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is a time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Stewart, could you please begin the deliberation since you're the lead for the case?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was hard-pressed to see any other than just a technical process. I was hard pressed to find anything of an ethical complaint. you know, this man was contracted with a special operations group and not in a hospital-based practice. I can certainly see in a hospital-based practice where you need to keep the clinical hours up each week. He's had a couple of major health issues that complicated the situation and kind of precipitated his road to retirement. But I'm not coming up with anything that is an ethical complaint that this board should be examining.
Anything else for the committee on deliberation?
The only thought I have is where does this fall under required reporting to the board? I mean, Ms. Galvin, can we talk about that without going into executive session, or do we need to?
Yes, so it would be on his next renewal. He wasn't charged with, it doesn't fall under the 10-day requirement for being right. charged with a crime.
Thank you. That's all I needed. So I also don't have concerns here.
As I understand it, if on renewal, if anyone has been stripped by clinical privileges, they have to report. But that, I think the renewal came before these complaints came down.
That's correct. His next license renewal will be in February 2023, so in 4 months.
Is there any motion on this one?
I move that we dismiss.
Second.
And I would just like to add before the vote on that, that Dr. Borders, please make sure to still report this on your renewal. And that will also allow us to, if you can also include any kind of follow-up or resolution to this, that would be great. But just because we've talked about this doesn't mean not to report it.
All right. All those in favor of dismissal, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Complaint number 2237 regarding Dr. Borders has been dismissed. And the licensee will be notified in writing by the board staff in the near future regarding the committee's decision today. Thank you for all who attended today. Moving on to the last agenda item, which is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Seconded.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.